Welcome to the Becoming Eva podcast, where we discuss real life issues from a woman's perspective.
Becoming Eva seeks to break the silence within the female community while fostering authenticity, transparency, and healing.
We're your hosts, LaToya Moore
and Maya Dawson.
Let's get started.
Hey!
Happy Saturday.
Happy Saturday, BE community. We are here. We are here. We are here. And you see, we got a special guest. It's about to be a good one, y'all. It's about to be a good one. So we're gonna jump on in. First off, how are you ladies doing today?
It's been a cool day. As you guys know, my life with four kids, full-time job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really like two full-time jobs if you count being a mom.
Yeah.
Oh, and a wife.
Yeah.
It's always full. My plates is very full. My coworkers, they told me it's like I have this magic. They said, I don't know how you get everything done can log off at 4:00.
That's real.
Like, we just keep seeing your name pop up on everything. How do you have time for everything?
Yeah.
It's the grace of God.
It is. But you do it. And you do it well. You look fabulous, might I add.
How old are you? Are you a kid?
I have a 2-year-old. Mm-hmm. I have a 5-year-old, a 7-year-old, and 10. This is when you know you got too many kids. You got to stop and really think
about the ages.
You're doing it. Because bless you. My best friends, they have 4 kids. Mm. And they have he's 4 months, and they have one who just turned 2, and then they have one who's about to turn 4 in March, and then my goddaughter in the lineup turns 6 in June.
Oh my.
So they're like, so I just, and all the time, I'm just like, how do y'all do this? It's like, and I love kids, but I don't want any of my own.
See?
I just want to get married, and I want to live in my auntie glow. Because I love being an auntie.
Yeah, auntie's everything.
I love it. It's so fun. I'm like, yeah, I'll take the kids for 4
and
hours or 3 hours. Yeah, and give them back. I like.
We need to get in a rotation.
I like.
Coming in without further ado. I got to get the bio out because, y'all, it's heavy. It's full. But I'm so excited, y'all. I'm so excited. Okay. So we have here with us the amazing, absolutely incredible Erin Knight. Yay!
Thank you.
Okay, so a little bit about Erin. Erin is an experienced designer. Love that. I might have to borrow this.
Okay. For sure.
Experienced designer, podcaster, and music business educator based. Are you in Atlanta now? You're in Tennessee,
no,
right?
Moved to Nashville,
yeah, she's in Tennessee now, Nashville, Tennessee. And in 2020, she started a label. Yes, y'all. I said she started a label, a record label, okay, and creative marketing agency with her business partner, Brandon Boone. Yes, shout out. And the label is called Build Your Own Dreams, which I'm excited for y'all to learn more about.
Okay. The knuckles.
So
that's how you know it's real.
Oh, snap.
The knuckle tap.
The knuckle
tap. Oh, wow.
What's this other one, too? What's this?
It's a flying saucer. Yes. No, so spaceships go to space, flying saucers come to Earth.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying? Because I'm an ATLian.
Wow.
Yeah,
ATLian. Thank you for educating. Okay, so we're coming back to that. All right, so y'all, she got her own record label with her business partner, Brandon Boone, called Build Your Own Dreams. Tatted on the knuckles, so you know it's real. All right, and Erin's focus aims to enable creatives to reach their full potential by championing for ownership. Amen. Amen. I've witnessed this firsthand, y'all. So, self-proclaimed artist advocate, she's devoted her career to teaching artists how to maximize their impact by owning their intellectual property. I say it again, owning their intellectual property and monetizing their dreams.
Amen.
We don't have to make this a hobby. Okay, let me stop. Okay, so anyways, in May of 2023, Erin actually released her first ebook, How to Be Excellent, after establishing Excellence Academy in 2022. The book landed on 4 different bestseller lists. Erin is not only focused on developing artists, but she's also focused on educating and encouraging the executives, amen, behind the artist. So, y'all, we're excited. So,
you made my bio sound really good.
I mean, That's what we do. It is good though.
Thank you. It is. I mean, I think it's dope, but like I was sitting here thinking, oh, I gotta update it. I'm like, oh, it reads well still.
Yeah, it really does. It does. So it's all right, impressive. Y'all. It very. So a little segment we have on Becoming Eva is called What Had Happened Was. Okay. And so what had happened was it's really us sharing with the BE community how we were introduced to you initially.
Because
you know, you've been like in the circle, in the family, like often
in the universe, yeah, the
for like
stars.
A minute. Yeah. But it's been amazing to just see like the glow up. And I say glow up. We're gonna give you your flowers. Okay. We're gonna say she's a boss. We're gonna say she's doing her thing, she's flowing in her element. I mean, like, we're gonna say that so you don't have to, but literally it's the truth.
That's generous. I feel like I'm about to hit my glow up.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying? So that's, I mean, I think I'm grateful for mm-hmm. that thing. I'm not going to not take it. I'll mm-hmm. take all the encouragement. Thank you. But I feel like I'm about to hit the glow up, you know?
If all of this that I just read is like pre-glow up, y'all, that's all I'm saying. Okay, that's all I'm saying. So what had happened was, you want to kick us off, Toya?
Sure. I think I met you. I don't know. But I know I met you a long time ago at an event. I do remember you. But most recently, we met up at the Essence Festival.
Yes.
And then I went to your 2023 Holy Summit.
You came to Holy?
Yeah, I was there.
I mean, there was so much going on. I feel like that makes sense. But like, I'm not saying that because we probably had a whole conversation because people be like, remember when we?
No,
like,
no,
you were in your zone.
Okay.
I was like, focus. Yep. We were kind of like, there she goes. There she goes. Okay.
You came to Holy too?
Yes,
oh, I saw Ryan. That was it. Did Sean come?
Yep. I might have seen. All three of the track stars were there.
We were all there.
TJ Jeremiah was at the building.
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely. I saw Ryan. That's the, and I know that there was. Because it was the Holy Culture guys were there too. And I like saw one when I was trying to get somebody, the Wi-Fi, all that was going on. But I had no idea.
You were like,
okay, sorry, y'all.
Yeah, that boot was amazing.
Thank you.
So when you say that you are, and let me make sure I said this right, an experienced designer.
Yes.
She means it. Like she creates and cultivates atmospheres for people to, you know, create, express, be educated, to entertain, like all of that. So yes,
thank you.
Yeah, Holy Summit. I would say for me, I remember like really working with you when we were working on Sean's rollout.
Yes.
Yeah, Sean David Grant released the album Wonder Years. Go pick it up if you haven't already.
The branding for that was so, it was so killer.
It was fun.
You know, the tape and just the colors
vinyl,
it was the
photo.
That's
shoot,
a slept on,
dance.
Even just from a business side, that's slept on. And then the music, it's like every song you're like, oh, yeah.
That project to me is one of those albums that you have to listen to over and over. And to this day, every time I listen to it, I hear
something new
because I mean, Sean is such a layered person. We'll talk about him later, y'all. Yeah, we'll talk about him later. But all that to say, go get Wonder Years so you can do your homework for when we do talk about him later. But yeah, so I had the privilege of working with you then. And I was like, this is creative genius. Like, seriously, because I just dug your vibe. Like, you were, first of all, like, yes, the creative. I love just being around creatives, period. But I could tell you were like about your business as well. Like you were managing an artist at the time. You were overseeing.
Who was I managing at
I think
time?
You were managing.
Was it
Caleb
RG?
Mitchell.
Oh, yeah. Caleb
Mitchell. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then there was an event, a conference that you were coordinating because we went to the venue because we were looking at venues for Sean's release.
For A3C, probably. A3C Festival.
And so I was like, this girl. Like, and then, like, we were trying to figure out stuff. And I was like, Erin, do you know? And it'd be like something crazy. Like, you know, a break dancer that can also ballet or something. And she was like, I know a guy. And I was like, how do you know a guy? Like.
That's my Atlanta-ness coming out.
I was like, this, like, for real. So that was my glimpse where I was like, there's something special here. And literally just as the years went on, like, the events that you were curating and the platforms that you were speaking on just grew and grew and grew. And like, I was like, uh-oh, don't forget the little people. Hey girl, how you doing? How you doing? Like, for real. So it's been, like I said, I feel like I'm experiencing the glow up, but I can't wait.
Thank you.
If you say you on the brink of the glow up.
So. This year, I'm telling you, this year, y'all are going to be, that's an exclusive. I don't know what's going to happen. But I feel it. This year is going to be very, very different. Yeah. And I got to give y'all a Holy exclusive.
Mark your calendars because Holy Summit is coming back.
Yep.
It's going to be Labor Day weekend again. For 2024, it will be August 31st. So mark your calendars. Find a way to get here. You do not want to miss it. I'm excited.
We got payment plans available for real. So I want you. I want it to be accessible to everybody. Call your cousin. Stay with your cousin. You know, it's like this is really about the creative community, whether you feel stuck or you feel like you're about to go to the next level and you need the right people around you, or whether you're like, man, I know I'm a creative, but I haven't had the courage to step out.
Yeah.
Like this year, especially, we're going to have so many different breakouts. Like I'm excited. So if you fancy yourself any type of creative, whether it's culinary arts, music, maybe you're just a strategic creative. That's where I thrive is strategic creation. This is for you.
I love that. And I felt that. I just want to say I felt that at Holy because it was like, it was a safe space for everybody. You didn't have to say, oh, I'm a recording artist or, you know, oh, I make beats or, oh, I, you know, like literally photographers, graphic designers, podcasters, like everyone was there and we were just vibing off of each other. And then at the same time being educated, equipped and encouraged. So I love it.
Wow. So the acronym, so my parents are pastors, right?
Okay.
And that was kind of part of the whole redemption story. That's their building that they own in the back. It's a community center. The front is their church building, but the back.
So the summit is at your parents' church?
Yeah, yeah, which is a crazy redemption story.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
So dumb.
So the building we were in is like actually their community center. So they rented out to whoever. So they rented it out to us for a really great price for the weekend. But, yeah, so like I if anybody knows anything about me, I didn't have a great relationship with my dad.
Yeah.
And it's growing. I can't say that we're buddy, but like it's not, we're not at odds anymore like we were. And we speak to each other. But so my parents have been pastors since I was my whole life, but they started the church when I was 8 or 9. And the mission of my parents' church is to see. So serve, encourage, and equip people. So when we started the summit, I was just like, Dad, can I take that as our internal mission? So we don't even put it on anything. So you were just hitting on that. That's like, I want to serve, encourage, and equip the creative community in the future of the church, you know, because the church is not going to look like what it looks like now. It's being undone as we speak.
Absolutely.
So I want to be a part of influencing the future and influencing now and being like, yo, we're not leaving. We're getting stronger, you know?
That's beautiful. See. Serve, encourage, equip. Did I get
it? Yep, you got it right.
I love it. And you actually touched on our next segment, which is your origin story. So take it away, Toya.
Yes. For the Becoming Eva crew, if you guys don't know about Erin Knight, can you please tell the audience a little bit about where you're from, where you grew up, a little bit about your family?
And I grew up not too far from here. I'm from the south side of Atlanta. You know what
south
I'm saying?
South?
Yeah. Well, that's southwest Atlanta.
Oh,
I'm true south.
My bad.
Yeah. So right
now, I'm true south.
No, it's cool. I'm from Riverdale.
Okay.
But I just, before I moved, I was living in the West End for like the last two years I was in the spots.
Okay.
So yeah, it's dear to me. My church was in southwest Atlanta. So that's why I moved over there because most of my church, like 70% of our church lived within 2 miles of the church because we were like very missional in the West End. So I had to get over there. But
hey, you seeing me, y'all. I'm sorry.
But I love Swats. I'm from the South side. So I just love all of Atlanta except for the North side. I don't rock it. But neither here nor there.
Sorry, y'all.
Now, if you like North, cool, like Marietta, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you black, cool, but I just don't, I'm cool with you. But if you from the north side of Atlanta, I just be like, what is that, North Carolina at this point? Like, because it's a different energy. It don't feel like Atlanta. Especially when you get into Alpharetta, but we won't go there.
We're not going to do it, though.
Shout out to y'all, though. so I'm from the south side of Atlanta. My parents are pastors. My dad, my whole life worked for the FAA though. Oh. So my mom really was the backbone and the structure of the church, mm-hmm. making sure everything ran. Mm-hmm. They're associate pastors at the church that I like was mm-hmm. born into. Mm-hmm. And then they started their own church when I was like 8, just as a Bible study, basically. Oh. But they wanted to leave and have a clean break from the church. Okay. So we'd go to my grandfather's super Southern Baptist church the other Sundays. And then my parents would hold Bible study and service every 5th Sunday. Oh, so then after 2 years, when I was 10, they really like it launched. And
yeah,
and they were doing it just in there. We had a living room set up, you know, 10 or 15 people. And it's still not like a huge church. Mm-hmm. They probably got like 150 to 200 members, probably 200 people regularly on a Sunday. But yeah, so I'm the middle only daughter of pastor's kids. Aww. So I have a younger brother and older brother. Mm-hmm. But I really have always had just a love for business. So I started my first business when I was 8. It's called Heavenly Treats. So before I even understood what a good business proposition was, before I knew what it was, I understood it. Mm. So I'm like, okay, my parents are pastors. So I've always been not a very morning person, mm-hmm. right? So when they wake us up, whatever, I'm dragging. I miss breakfast, get in the car.
Yeah.
I may not eat till 2:00.
Oh, wow.
So, and my parents are my dad was in the military.
Yeah.
My parents are like, let's you go. Make the bed, you lie in it. You know what I'm saying? Like, you had the option of getting up, whatever. So I was like,
wow,
always hungry after church. Like, and I'm like, I can't be the only one who's hungry. And I went to black church. You know what I'm saying? It's not no, like, even my black church on the west side right now, we are 1.5 to 2 hours max. My parents back then, we was like 3 hours on a lightweight day. You know what I'm saying? Like lightweight. So like, and I would have to get there because my parents had to open the church. Yeah. So they get there at like 8 or 9 o'clock. Uh-huh. Then it was like the worship team would practice. Yeah. And then, you know, then the service, the doors would open. Mm-hmm. Then service, we had a black church again. So doors may open at 10, but they didn't start service till 10:30 because they wanted people to be there because it was a small church.
Oh,
so then service starts at 10:30. By the time the worship team sings way too many songs, it's like 11:15 and we're doing offering and they got to do another song. Right. And then my dad gets up around like 12.
Oh, God.
So if he preaches for an hour, hour and a half, we're at 2:00.
You're right.
So at like 8, 9 years old. Okay, so I guess I was about 10. I've been saying 8 for like, because I've told this story several times recently. But I was like 10 because my parents didn't move into the building that we did it until 10.
Okay.
So yeah, so my friend, one of my homegirls that went to church, she made my favorite chocolate chip cookies, and I've been curious my whole
girl.
Chocolate chip cookies. But I love chocolate chip cookies even still now.
Yeah, me too.
But I had never had one. It's so cool how God designs us, because like the indicators are there from a really young age. Like whenever I finally figured out, well, it's gonna happen this year, when I make my million from music, the next, like I'm talking about my first million, because it's gonna be a lot more. But like but this year I want to invest in some property, but then I want to get into restaurant touring, like the culinary arts. Like I have like, I love food. I'm a good cook. Like I can cook.
Okay.
I can throw some stuff together when I really have the time to focus on it. But I just love like tasting things. I will try almost anything at least once, but I've eaten all over the world.
Yeah.
I feel like it's so much input. You know, I dream in flavors. It's like a full body experience.
No, well,
proverbially, not actually sleep. But yeah, but like I can think of a flavor that I want to taste.
And oh
that, so if I cook sometimes, I'll be like, there's something I want to taste. And I'm like working till I can find that flavor. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? But that's how I iterate events.
I love it.
She had a chocolate chip cookies and I was like, what do you do? I've never had a chocolate chip cookie like this. And she was like, I put vanilla pudding in it. So she would get the pudding pack. And she would add that into the mix because she made it from scratch.
Wow.
She'd add vanilla pudding into it. And she had got the recipe from her grandmother. Because I'm like, I've never had a chocolate chip. And I'm young. The fact that I could disciple that at a young age.
Y'all.
So I'm like, can you make like 3 or 4 dozen for Sunday? And we're going to bag them up and sell them after.
10.
So I just like make a sign, Heavenly Treats, and set up a little table right out. Like as soon as my dad like prays, I'm like sprinting. I had a table sitting on the side. I like go set it up. So as people are walking out, I'm selling the bags, probably like $2 a piece. So the first Sunday, we might have made like $30.
Wow.
My friend is like hyped. I'm like, don't touch that money. I'm like, Mom, take me to the store. Right. So
I tell invest. My
literally
invest as a little to more product. You know, 10-year-old would have been like, Happy Meals to everybody.
But here's the thing. I asked her to make the cookies for me off the strength. Like, I was just like, you know, you got the supplies. I'm like, Tisha, how many can you make?
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I could probably make like 2 dozen, 2.5 dozen. So it was just the supply she had at home.
That's
so
amazing.
I'm like, if it's free and we made $30, what if I take this $30? You know, so I'm like,
10 though, y'all.
It's the blessing. Like, literally, it's been in me. You know what I'm saying?
That's amazing.
So I'm like, Tisha, don't make cookies next week. I said, next week, make a red velvet cake. So I decided, I asked my mom, Mom, hey, can you take me to Sam's? I knew Sam's had better prices because my mom always said it. My mom was always like, because my parents are pastors, so we were shopping for church events and whatever. And I would ask my mom, why do we always go to Sam's? And she's like, I can get more for the money. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, Mom, take me to Sam's.
Crazy.
And so she's like, okay, I'll take you to Sam's next week. So I go into the store and I start grabbing it because I'm like, I'm not going to sell cookies. I'm not going to get Tisha to make cookies. I'm going to buy cookies because it'll be cheaper. She can make a red velvet cake because you can't buy a good red velvet cake. I knew that then. You can't buy, not at the grocery store.
Not at the grocery store.
I like Famous Amos cookies. Even though I like Tisha's cookies, I like Famous Amos too.
Yeah.
But a good red velvet cake, I've never liked store-bought red velvet cakes.
Lord.
So I'm like, make a red velvet cake because I don't know how this is the anointing of the Lord.
Crazy.
I knew I could sell a red velvet cake for more than I could sell cookies because it's more of a novelty, right? So my mom takes me to the store. I start grabbing the chips that I like. She said, hold on, look at this. This is called the price per unit. So she shows me, this is the amount of chips that you can get for this price.
Get it, mama.
You may want Doritos. Those are 47 cents per, but we can go get the Wise chips.
Get it, mama.
And I was like, well, what if they don't like those? She's like, it may not be their preference, but they're going to buy it. So even that, my mom was teaching me right then and there. So boom, we went back. I probably made $100, $150. So next week, I'm like, Tisha, I'm not going to keep asking you to. I'm like, just make 2 cakes, right? And so I also knew supply and demand. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, what if we still run out? I'm like, that's perfect because next week they'll come out sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew they would come out sooner. So every week I would go out sooner. I would set up the table. I would leave during worship would be over. I ran sound at my parents' church, like, you know, a little sound mixer. I just went down. So as soon as I got my dad set up, I'd run outside. So then my mom kept seeing me leave, like, back-to-back Sundays. So, like, I think it was probably the 8th or 9th Sunday. She comes outside and we finish. She said, okay, you're shut down. She said, we serve the Lord in this house. You're not going to leave church to come start your business or to sell. So she took the money. Because my mom had been keeping the money. Yeah. She gave me $20. She gave Tisha's mom half the money. And then she put the rest in my savings account. Tragic. But then
tragic.
Yeah, because I wish my mom would have like honed that and developed it more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wish she would have just been like, hey, here are your parameters.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, my mom was still learning and I was her only girl. Like, especially because I'm very different the way that I function. So if she would have given me parameters, I would have abided. But she was just like, nope, I'm pulling this for that was my whole life. I felt like my parents were constantly like, nope. It would just take time. I'm like, yo, just give me a little, an inch. So, like, with the bug bit. So, that was my first business. I started my next one maybe a few summers later. I did, like, a mommy's day out where moms would drop their kids off at my parents' house. And my mom was like, you're doing – I was probably, like, 14. Mm. And people were like, oh, is your mom going to – my mom was like, I'm not watching these kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I would charge parents, like, $10 a day to drop off their kid. But I was only open, like, 2 days a week because my mom was like, you're not about to be – bringing all these kids to my house all the time. But I would get like, you know, like 10 or 15 kids per week. So one day I'd have 4 or 5, you know, so it was like,
amazing.
I still don't know what happened to that money. I think my mom took it and put it up. I don't know what happened to that money, but oh, that's what it was. This is when I really learned. I forgot. I really learned about cost and overhead. I know this is getting long. I'm going to be done.
Oh, but my gosh.
I had to.
Cost and overhead, y'all.
I didn't know it was called. I didn't know it was called that, but it was like, it would be $10 per kid. And I told them they had a second kid, it would only be $5, right?
Got it.
But I was feeding everybody.
Yeah.
So then when I was like buying the food, you know what I'm saying? And I just remember that. I'm like, I was spending my food costs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you're young, so you go to the store.
Yeah.
I grab a little gum here, a little whatever. Mm-hmm. And every week I come back, I'd be like, why do I have $18?
Like, no money.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what happened. Yeah, that's my origin story.
Aaron, I just have to ask you, first of all, like, y'all, clearly you could see we could be here for days.
Yeah,
like,
stories for days with business since I started.
I love, that's just what the business is. Like, we didn't even, but I want to ask you, as a PK, as a creative, that's a PK, as an entrepreneur, that's a PK, it's evident just from that story alone, you were constantly pushing the boundaries.
Always.
Like,
always.
Constantly. And I see, like, you know, just both sides of the equation where your parents were educating you and equipping you, but then at the same time, it was like, whoa, wait now. Okay, who is this person? And we don't want her to get too out of control because, you know, it's just a lot I could imagine as a parent. So tell us a little bit about how those dynamics were,
rough.
And what is helping to bring it full circle? Because I know you were saying, you know, things are getting better with your father in particular. So what is kind of helping to bring things full circle?
Yeah, so I think the older that I get, the more I realize how unique I am. Mm-hmm. So then it gives me even more compassion for my mom, especially because she was just worried about me.
Yeah.
You know, so like I was like, I felt very misunderstood as a kid. And I was great at school, so I made great grades, but it was hated being, it felt like I was so confined and it felt like I was always in trouble and I couldn't figure out why. I'm like, when I go into the real world, people adore me. But here at home, I'm always coming up against, you know, so that was really, it was rough. It was very hard for me. I didn't understand the issues. And now I have a lot of compassion, especially for my mom, because I'm like, I'm her only girl.
Yeah.
She didn't know how to raise me. She was very nervous and scared. Mm-hmm. She had experienced a ton of trauma. So she was just like worried that I was going to experience all these things in the world. And I think she wanted to rein me in, but she also didn't understand me. So she's like, where are you going? What is this motor inside of you? And I don't know. I've just always been motivated by the fact that I could see something in my head and then bring it into the world. Like the essence of the creator, like there's a thrill for me, like to be able to envision something and then it's in front of us. And then when somebody can partake in it and I can watch somebody do something that I saw in my head, blows my mind every time. That's why I keep making things, because I'm like, yo, like I saw this, like I dreamed it, and then it's here, you know. So yeah, so that was rough. I ended up not going to school. I got into Duke, my dream school, but I didn't go though.
Oh.
So, yeah, I didn't go. I got into Duke. I got a full ride, but they didn't cover housing or anything. And I played basketball. So I had basketball scholarship offers and I didn't want to play basketball because I was like, I like basketball. Yeah. I like playing it, but I don't love this. And I don't want to be confined to your definition of what I have to do. So I knew I wasn't going to go to school for that. That was news to my dad. I never told him.
Yeah.
But, so he was like, why didn't you take these scholarships? I'm like, I'm smart. I don't have to take a basketball scholarship.
Wow.
And he was like, well, I'm not going to pay for your house. So I was like, well, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get loans. I graduated like a week after I turned 18. So I couldn't sign, like they had to co-sign on everything. And, you know, the college stuff happens in the fall, you know, so that created a ton of resentment.
Yeah.
It was just like, so that made it me and my dad even further apart. So yeah, I ended up staying in the house, going to Georgia State.
Okay.
And I was like, F this. I went for one semester and then I started selling real estate. So I sold a couple of houses and they're like, you still got to go to school. So then I was like, let me really piss them off. I went into a theology program because my dad was like, you can't make any money being a pastor. I was like, I'm not trying to be a pastor. He was like, so why are you going into this program? I'm like, you said I had to go to school. So I finished with that program. And then by that time I was working with the band. That one of the guys that was in the program with me started a band, quit the first show, but I stayed with the band.
Yeah,
we started touring rock music. I learned how to write business plans. We got an investor. We went overseas, started
so
a label.
Were you like the tour manager?
No, I was their manager.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So at first the lead singer called me their manager and the guys were like, she's not our manager. Mm-hmm. But then within 9 months I had them on a national tour.
And then
they were like, yeah, she's our manager. Mm-hmm. Like, of course. And that was all a fluke. It was just me, like, same thing. They were like raffling tickets from stage when I went to their first show. I'm like, are y'all raffling Falcons tickets? And they're like, we're trying to pay for our merch. And I'm like, just form an LLC and write off your instruments. And they were like, what? And because I knew about business.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know about the music business, but I'm like, this is something you can write off. So the lead singer was like, yo, give me your number. So then every day he he would like every day he would text me like, what about this? What about this? He'd ask me business questions, like music business questions. And then I would text him back. So after a week, he's like, how do you know so much about the music business? I was like, I don't. When you ask me, I go Google it. And Google now is not what it used to be. So I would have to go through pages and pages of Google. I go on Ask Jeeves. Y'all don't know about that.
I remember Ask Jeeves.
I go on Ask Jeeves, and then I would find a podcast. This is I've been listening to podcasts since before people even knew what podcast.
Yeah.
I go on a podcast, whatever. So it may take me 30, 45, an hour to text him back. He just thought I was busy. I was a nanny at the time. Kids would go to sleep and I would just be Google, Google, Google. So at this time, now I'm learning.
I know. This is amazing.
Mom is like, what do I do with this creative child that I don't fully understand?
Yeah.
And I'm asking this question for the parents out there because I've got four kids and they all have these different personalities and you want them to, you know, develop their gifts and talents and become the people that God has designed them to be. But it's hard because, you know what the real world is like, and you kind of want to like keep them safe and like, well, you know, just kind of guide them. So what kind of advice in hindsight, what kind of advice would you give a parent on raising children that are very unique? Because I have some very unique kids.
This is my favorite part about being an auntie too, because I feel like I can see things that maybe my friends who are at capacity or over capacity. And I'm like, that's why I'm like, hey, yeah, I'll take the kids for a few hours, 4 hours, 5 hours. I'm gonna give them back.
Because I
love kids, you know, and I love investing them. I think like engage their curiosity. I would say that's the first thing. Kids love the internet because they're curious. It's not because they want to be pacified like we think. They become pacified and it becomes their norm because they don't get anything else. But even now, like, I don't really watch TV because I get bored because I can almost anticipate it's kind of like the same things. So if I'm watching, it's because I want to learn. Like, I just sit on YouTube and listen to podcasts. Like, that's my wind down. And I'm not saying, I think, because I know people who watch TV and it doesn't mean that they're not curious. I'm not making the delineation there. But a lot of times people are like, kids just want to be inside on the computer. It's engaging their curiosity. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So I would try to listen more when they light up about things and kind of pinpoint that. You know what I'm saying? Like, what are the things that make them light up when they're talking? Like, so I know this little boy at my church, he was always playing games, whatever. So his mom was like, you should watch a video on how they make these. Like, when he was like 7 or 8, he's 12 now and he's coding games and they're functional. So they move slowly, whatever, but he's coding games now because his mom was just like, hey,
amazing.
Because you don't know what you don't know. So the kid may just be like, I like this game. I like this game. I like this game. I like this game. If your mom's like, did you ever wonder how they made it? Mm. Now, some kids, it may not interest them, but there's something that makes your kid light up and that's, engage their curiosity. After the older I get, I still don't get it. I don't understand this part of me still. People say I'm intimidating and I have no idea why. Because I'm a crier. I'm like very gentle.
When you're in your zone.
Yeah.
Like, it's like
superior, but like a smushy, like, soft.
But I'm not mean at all. Like, it's not even in
you're not, but you're very direct.
I'm decisive.
Yeah. And a lot of people either can't handle that or they just aren't used to it.
Yeah, but I'm saying I'll walk into a room and people be like, you're intimidating. I'm like, no, I'm 5'5". Yeah. Like, what? Like, and I'm always in soft textures. If you look at me, you know what I'm saying? I'm like, it's like I'm soft. And if you look at me too long or hug me too long, I'm going to cry.
Aww.
So it's like, I've never understood that about me. But now that I know that that's how I resonate with people, I know a big part of that is that I know. And so that's challenging to people, even when it's not meant to be. I'm not bothered if, you know what I'm saying, like, I'm not bothered by you or whatever, but like, so I get that. But I think you're right. Like, sometimes I would do things and it felt like a challenge of authority. And so, like, I would say give that I'm not a parent, so I don't, mm-hmm. I can't speak for you, but I have so much fun with my nieces because I do things I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like, I feel like find things that you enjoy doing where there's overlap and not mm-hmm. just like, I got to do this kids thing. You know what I'm saying? So like, and then, bringing them along, like my nieces, sometimes when I'm setting up my events, like y'all might have seen them at Holy, they were in the sound booth with me. So it's like, my thing is, you may not even fully understand this, but like, let's get this experience. Like, let's try it out. You know, and their dad is a DJ, and their mom is a baker. And so like, they have their own knife sets at home. And so it's like, and they're real knives, but she's been teaching them since they were super young. How, and so, and then now they're learning to DJ. So they have really good rhythm. And it's just like, just, they may not fully understand it. They may not be good at it, but it's like just the exposure. I think when you're constantly exposing your kids to things, then it gives them this understanding that they're limitless and like their possibilities are infinite. But when you're always like, and I believe in boundaries because boundaries are what keep us safe. Boundaries are what keep us protected. But yeah, they're super healthy. But I think like I didn't have any boundaries as an adult because I had too many boundaries as a kid. And that led to me being really hurt.
Let's move into the becoming aspect with Erin Knight. So talk to us about Build Your Own Dream. How did this come about? I mean, we talked a little bit about how you got on the manager journey, but Build Your Own Dreams is so unique as a record label. So tell us, number one, what led you to officially launch one? Because that's huge. And then tell us what your personal convictions were about how the label should be and why.
Yeah. So right during the pandemic, I just tweeted, like, I wish I could take all my management. Because I, at that point, I owned a booking agency, too. And we were doing tours. Like, 2019, we did the St. Holy tour. So that's like RG. That was my first like really big tour. Everything else had been kind of smaller with Caleb, but still really cool. But with RG, it was like we were selling out. We sold out 11 of the 14 venues. So, and it was like me finding the venues, booking them directly, reaching out, whatever. So during that tour, my business partner, Brandon, and Build Your Own Dreams, and another business partner came on and were like, we should make a booking agency. So like on that tour, we were like forming it, like, and they started helping me ticketing all that. So I had that experience. I had the management experience, but I also was throwing parties in Atlanta. Like I had show, like outside of concerts, I had just started throwing parties in Atlanta. So I'm like, when I first started throwing concerts, I really thought the emphasis was on the artist. And then I started doing Rap Reel and I figured out how to get people to a venue if they didn't know anybody. So by
Rap Reel, you're taking me back. Go ahead.
I mean, because and we can get into that because Track Stars is a huge part of my formation, especially in the Christian hip hop scene. So then, because I had thrown concerts, whatever, and I started throwing parties, I'm like, oh, I can get people out. It's not just the, like, because you know, sometimes you're like, oh, well, the artist brought no, I knew I could
you
get
could
people
do it.
Out, because you know, if people come to parties, they're coming for the concert, you know? And so, yeah, so Build Your Own Dreams, my thought process was, how can I put all of these worlds together, right? And so, like, my dream is for Black people to be free, right?
Amen.
Like, and if we look at, what is it, the Yergi, not the Yergian archetypes, what is Maslow's hierarchy of needs? It's like, your needs being met at a baseline is the first part. So if I'm a dreamer, but I can't feed myself, and I'm not even talking about feed myself off my dreams. I'm saying, like, if you're hungry, you're not dreaming. You're only trying to get your next meal. You know what I'm saying? Or your dreams frustrate you more than they inspire you because they're so far away.
So
I'm like, okay, people's basic needs have to be met, right? So that's like how can I help people get money? Because the music industry is just a model for modern day slavery, right? So when we were slaves. Right.
Y'all, she dropping so many gems, but go ahead.
And this is really why I wanted to get into the music industry. When we were slaves, we built America. And then now the poverty cycle that we're in is not just because of slavery. It's been back to back to offenses against our people, right?
Yeah.
But then they tell us, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. But we represent, you know, what, like 18% of America, if you exclude incarcerated peoples, we're at like 13.something% of America, but if we built it, we should own the majority of it, and we own less than I think 2% of the wealth in America, something like that. If my numbers are wrong, forgive me. I don't check them very often, but I check them sometimes. So if we look at that, but we built it, we go into the music industry, the two biggest genres right now, hip-hop and then Latin music. right?
Okay.
Which are my people still.
Yeah.
Right? Us. This is us.
Yeah.
And the like fastest growing genre right now is the Afrobeat. Everything coming out of the diaspora. I don't want to call it Afrobeat because a lot of stuff gets misnamed Afrobeat.
But diaspora. Like
the diaspora of African music, right? Mm-hmm. So two biggest genres, fastest growing genre. We are those. Right?
Amazing.
We own less than 11% share of the revenue in the music industry.
Wow.
So when I say it's modern day slavery, people try to act like it's this big hyperbole. I'm like, I'm talking about wealth. I'm not talking about slave labor because that's there too. But I'm talking about wealth dispensation. If we're talking about brass tacks, it's almost the same metrics. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm like, I got to come fix this. And I'm a big proponent. I heard when I was like 16 or 17, that quote, be the change you want to see. And I'm the type of person, I'd read them joints in school and believe it.
Yeah, amen.
I've never been the type of person who was like, oh, they just talk. Because I was never just talking. When I said I was going to change the world, when I said I'm going to be a millionaire, when I said I'm going to affect people's lives, I never was just like, if all the conditions are right. I didn't have a, it was just, that's what I'm going to do, you know? And that's just, that's one of my unique traits. So I was like, how can I be the change? Okay, I'm a manager. I'm getting into rock music. I need to learn more because if I understand the music industry, I can find more ways for my rock band to make money than the average person. Because when I came in and told them to write off the instrument, I realized that I was an anomaly.
Absolutely.
Why hadn't y'all thought about that already?
Absolutely.
So then I'm like, oh, the way I think is an asset, you know?
Absolutely.
So that's how I came into this. I'm like, how can I put together all? So I'm like, your basic needs. You need finances, whatever. But then the next thing is mental health, right? So I feel like you can't really like live your dream. You may be able to build it, but you can't live it and enjoy it if your mental health is messed up. And so then I was like, I want to send all of our artists to therapy. And then I started looking at the cost of therapy. I wasn't even in therapy myself. I just gotten back into therapy at the time. I started in 2018, took some time off. My therapist kind of kicked me out of my program. And then I... because I was touring so much, she was like, you were supposed to show up. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm in Seattle. I'm in. She's like, all right, well, so she cut me loose. But then 2020, I got back into it. And so at first I was like, I like really can't afford this. So then I was like, well, I've always been in the streetwear. I used to not be able to dress at all. I like to see people who could dress. But now I figured it out. But I was like, well, I could sell t-shirts. I always had this dream. My first ever dream that I thought was going to make me millions upon millions, which it may still, was I wanted to start a t-shirt brand.
Okay.
So I had this notebook for years that I had all these ideas that would pop in my head. I let a friend borrow it. He lost it. He claims he didn't. So all the things. So it was devastating to me at the time. But then I remembered that dream when I brought the label back around. I'm like, I can finally do my t-shirt brand. So I was like, if I sell t-shirts and that sends people to therapy, now it's a group project, and I love group projects.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I like to rally people together. So, yeah, so that's how I started just thinking about the label from a position of what are the problems I want to solve? You know, how can I help heal people holistically, like fix their pockets, fix their lives, and then, you know, like maybe be a model for the music industry. So we just did 50-50 deals, like where, like, you own your masters, and we take 80% of the revenue until you recoup. And then once you recoup, we had a 50-50 deal. But it didn't work. So it's not even a label anymore. It's like, it didn't work because my dream can't be your dream unless your dream is my dream. You know what I'm saying? I can't tell you that this is the dream.
Yeah.
So, in effect, artists love that idea, but they're not motivated to work as hard because they're like, oh, I'm essentially going to get the money anyways. So, yeah, so the lack of motivation and then the lack of understanding. So when we were, like, trying to do deals with people, they're like, wait, explain this again. Wait, because they're used to the shackles.
Yeah.
Shackles make sense. You know what I'm saying? So, like,
they're being controlled. They're given the pathway instead of having to create it.
Yeah. And so then it's like, okay, well, I started my career in DIY rock music, so do it yourself, very indie. So when I came into hip hop, I'm like, oh, anybody can be indie.
Yeah.
But this is right before Chance started his ascent that I got into hip hop. So then people didn't understand what I was trying to do. So even with my label, it was just too early. I'm trying to let you be indie, but also infuse money.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't work because by the time you get to the point where we're actually recouping and making money, then the artist is like, well, why do I need to work with you? And it's
yeah.
Same thing happens with managers. They'll be like, well, what do you do?
Exactly.
And they're like, And it's like, well, I was here for X, Y, and Z years making no money. If anything, I believe what I'm getting paid now is, if anything, payback. You know what I'm saying? But that's neither here nor there. So, yeah, the label part didn't work, but I've never been one to be defeated. So we just pivoted.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we still have one artist signed. Caleb is still signed to the label, but it just didn't, it didn't make sense. We couldn't get enough people to understand it and agree to the terms, which is fine. Yeah. I felt like I feel like now in hindsight, I was being overly generous because it would have set me up to not really make money for a really long time. Yeah. So it'd be more like I was an investor. If I'm going to be an investor, let me invest. You give me my money back in 3 years. I want to be completely hands off.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to run all of this and be the investor and only receive part of the benefit. So it was lofty and it was generous, but I know more now about business. Mm-hmm. So we pivoted and we started doing like marketing and label services, because there's a lot of independent artists who are basically like, hey, I can kind of run my own shit, but I need a manager who knows more than just the average manager who's taking a check, and I need a manager who could probably help me with like growth strategy and stuff. So we started doing marketing. Issue was there, we're doing all the label services, everything, and still only taking a percentage like manager. So now it's me and Brandon, and then we started hiring a team because we're managing several high profile artists, and somehow everybody's making multi six figures and I'm still broke.
Exactly.
I'm paying for labor. And also, again, I'm taking 20% as a solo manager, but now I'm taking my 20% to split between us and pay the whole team. So there was no money in that. So then I started a festival, and because I was like, okay, this will help me capitalize on what I'm building with the artist, but I get more equity, I own it, and then I can make more money from it. And you know, y'all saw how that went. If you know anything about that, I was suddenly accused of being predatory, but when the shoe was on the other foot, they were fine with it. You know what I'm saying? When the percentage was in their favor, as when I was the manager doing all the work,
of course.
But when I front all of the money and front the team and all the relationships, I'm the predator. But whatever, that's neither here nor there. I just kept it moving. So now here we are, like, it's another pivot. Build Your Own Dreams, we just decided to be a hub. It's a hub for building community. So it becomes what it needs to become. That's why I'm sold out to it. I love Build Your Own Dreams because it's a concept more than it is an ideology around music. It's like I'm building dreams. So the dream is to still meet your needs. I want you to be healthy, whole, and loved. I want you to have money, and I also want the same things. You know what I'm saying? And so we do merchandise, we're working on growth strategy with artists, we're doing camp, like sync camps, we're doing educational stuff, and then Holy is a subsidiary under Build Your Own Dreams, because I want believers to be edified. So
the resilience of it all, y'all, like, she's like undefeated. She's like, well, that didn't work. So I tried this. So I pivoted here. Or so we thought, you know, like, that's amazing. So I just have one more question to close us out. But do you have anything before then?
No, this was amazing.
I'm like, we need to do a part two, y'all. That's all I'm saying. But so closing us out, I would love for you to just share along the lines how you shared advice about parents that are raising Christian, but creative. That's what I was thinking of, creative children. And they can be Christian too, but what advice would you give to independent artists, and what advice would you give to those that want to just make their mark in the arts and entertainment industry, period?
I would release your ideologies around failure. Failure is not a negative thing. It's been painted as that. Like when my 2-year-old niece, I always joke with my mom about this because she's always falling. She's the cutest. Her name is Fia. She's a middle child. So for me, her name is Sophia, but we all call her Fia. She's a middle child. Even though her little brother was just born, she's still in the middle. But she's been the middle child for, well, she's three. So 3 years. She's about to turn 4. So I just resonate with her because I'm a middle child. She got that middle child energy, but she's always like running and tripping. I'm like, Fia, get up. Like, that's just, it's just get up. It's, I'm not looking at, like, you failed at walking. She's three. And she's always so excited. So that's why she falls, because she's like looking so far ahead. So I think when you unhinge your understanding of failure from your understanding of negativity or success, like, you are required to fail to succeed. So it's really just getting you closer to success.
Say
you know what I'm saying?
One more time.
You are required. You are required to fail to succeed. So it's just a step in the process, you know. So I don't ever look at, I don't love them. I'm not like, oh, yay, I failed.
Yeah.
But I don't even, I never call anything I do failure. I've never, it's like not even in my vocabulary. I just use it because people talk about a fear of failure. And even when people used to be like, well, what do you do with your fear of failure? I'm like, I've never felt fear. Because it's like, I'm not, like, when I die, I will be victorious. So like, if I'm not dead yet, there is no, you know what I'm saying? So it's like,
preach.
For me, I just never, even like imposter syndrome, people are like, well, how do you deal with imposter? I've never, I didn't know what it was. I've never had that. Because I'm like, nobody knows what's going on. We know, it's not because I'm so confident. It's because I'm so aware that nobody knows what's going on.
We're all trying to figure
it out. Yes. Like everyday life is new. What is a pandemic?
Come on.
You know what I'm saying? Like everyday life is new. There's something new to figure out. Yeah. So I'm not connected to the same thoughts. Mm-hmm. So I would say disconnect yourself from like even productivity. I used to do like a lot of stuff and people were like, you're going to be a mogul. I wasn't super productive because I wanted to be a mogul. I was super productive because I was dealing with depression and I was trying to work my way out of my depression. I also had very low self-worth. So I felt like the more I did for people, the more they would value me. When I got healed, I'd just be sitting on my front porch. What did you do today? Nothing. No. Like, what did you do? I'm like,
nothing.
I sat on my front porch for 2 hours and I cooked. Then I sat on my front porch again and talked to my nieces. Then I went for a walk. Like, that's like a regular, like super, I'm not saying every day, but I'm very, I'm not connected to the pace of like,
amen.
I'm also currently single and childless. So there's privilege there. Like, yeah. There's privilege there, but I'm not super connected because when I used to work all the time, I was broke and frustrated.
Come on.
I was like, at least if I'm going to be broke, let me have some peace. Mm-hmm. So like 2 years ago, I just was like, I'm going to start saying no to more gigs because it's a net negative.
Yeah.
So I just kept saying no. And in that process, I kept saying, God, I trust you. And it got rough. I'm saying like, I sold my car.
Wow.
I was doing like little side odd gigs. You know what I'm saying? I really got down because I'm like, I want the peace more than I want them to say that I'm being productive, right? So that repositioning, that reposturing, now like top of, and it was rough. It wasn't just rough for a little while. Mm-hmm. It got really rough for like almost a year and a half where I was like, well, so 6 months of it was me wrestling with the idea that I knew. I'm like, I just want peace. Yeah. So then it was about a year of me unhinging. And then about another 6 months of me like, okay, Lord, I unhinged, but I'm super broke now. But it went from that to literally me making more in December than I made in the first 3 months. I'm saying like this last year than I made in the first 3 months of the year, by a long shot.
Got it.
And it's like, as I yielded and really truly believe the Lord is my provision, he just started highlighting places for me to like lower energy, higher impact. And where my gifts were valued. Amen. Instead of me like trying to be like, hey, I love you. Let me give you this. I don't give away stuff to people who don't understand it anymore.
Yeah.
That's cool. I'm going to just say no at this point. You know, and people still don't understand it. But there's people who are like, the intangibles are worth me spending money on.
Yeah.
And so now like even my mind is blown almost every day when I get checks. I'm like, they paid me for what? Y'all paid this much for that?
For you to be you. That's what they paid you for.
Okay. So look, this is such a perfect. So when people ask me what I do now, and this goes back into build your own dreams. My dream was, when people used to say, well, what's your dream? Who do you want to be like? I'm like, I want to be like me. When I was little, and people would paint that as arrogant, but I wasn't being arrogant. I'm like, if I'm the only me that's ever been created, I just want to be me.
Amen.
So now when people ask me what I do, I say, I'm myself. So that's my next book.
That's amazing.
That sounds like a song.
How to Be Yourself for a Living. Like, that's my next book.
That's y'all that heard it here.
I just want to be me. That needs to be like a hook.
That it.
Yeah. So that's, I would say my advice, I know that was really long-winded. Unhinge yourself from the definitions that you're holding and slow down. Like I wanted to be here 8 years ago. I didn't have the capacity, the understanding, the bandwidth, the wisdom, and you know, you always, I know God, but homegirl over there is I was never caught in comparison. I just always thought that I was more equipped than I thought I was.
Wow.
So when I went through last year, the hell that I went through last year was so rough for me. People saw one thing happen publicly and have no idea all the other things that were happening to me privately in addition to that.
Yeah.
So it was when I went through last year and I literally was like, I actually can't take any more, God. Like, I really, really, really can't. I'm not even in this place where I'm like, I see what God was doing. I hate when people do that. That joint. Bless the Lord.
It was hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Bless the Lord that I made it through, because I'm still reeling from the hurt of a lot of the stuff that just happened last year. But just like recently, I'm starting to see like, oh, my business model drastically changed, whereas it was just slightly pivoting every 6 months.
Yeah.
And I needed to do something. I needed to take a completely different look at it. You know, and I think even for me personally, I stopped questioning why people did or didn't like me. I'm a very polarizing person. You either love me or you hate me. I've never met a person in between. Yeah. I don't care anymore. Yeah. Whereas I used to be like, well, maybe it's because they saw me like this, or maybe it's because they're hurt. I don't care. I'm so grateful that I am who I am. I know my intentions are pure, and I know I love people.
Yeah.
Not even just like, I love people. If you misconstrue that, or if your insecurity muddles that, it's not on me. So I think even as I'm able to step into my identity better, so it makes me more sure. I used to kind of like talk around things so that people didn't take it out. I don't care if you take it out of context. I don't care if you're bothered by it. Like, and I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm learning how to speak to people well, because I'm neurodivergent. That's another thing I learned. So for me, it's very, whether life isn't black and white, but words are. So when I say it, I'm not meaning it to hurt, but it, you know what I'm saying? So I never realized that that was an issue until I learned I was neurodivergent. Gotcha. So I had to learn how to, you know what I'm saying?
I have a couple kids that are awesome.
Yeah.
I've never heard of neurodivergent.
It's just it's the nicer way of saying you have mental illness now, because they're realizing that mental illness isn't a negative thing.
Okay.
It's just your brain functions different.
I was going to say, well, then they need to change it from mental illness.
Right. So you're divergent. Now, sometimes it is a sickness that affects you where it's like it's really downgrades your life and the lives of the ones around you. Okay. But neurodivergent just means that your brain functions on a different functions on a different pattern.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So
sometimes they call it autism, you know.
Yeah,
neurodivergent. It's like their brain is wired differently.
Yeah. ADHD.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I have a very, I won't say unique. I have a lesser studied version of ADHD.
Got it.
So it took like it took me 3.5 years in therapy before my therapist was even like, whoa, I think you may have ADHD. Yeah. So like all these things, like again, going back to, it took time. So slow down. Once I got to the point where I started learning these things about me and I started spending the time investing in myself, I never watered myself. I would get the trickles that came down after, and I was dying of thirst, dying of thirst, serving, hoping that somebody would give me water. Mm-hmm. Then I started resenting the people that I was giving water to. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, why don't I just
get water. Some water. Yeah. Wow.
So I like all these things are things that took time, but don't rush yourself. Unhinge yourself from the expectations and thought process. Move like you have a purpose, because there's a window of time that God gives you the grace for ideas you have. Like genuinely, there's so many biblical examples of this. So sometimes you're frustrated because you didn't move when the window was there. But the sovereignty of the Lord is that he always brings back an opportunity. So maybe it's not the same idea. Maybe it's not the same opportunity, but don't self-loathe and don't get back in the cycle of self-sabotaging. So move when there's a window, right? So I'm the type of person, I will move. I just move.
Yeah.
Like I was frustrated in Atlanta. I'm moving to Nashville. People are like, why? I have no idea why. I just thought about Nashville. I'm moving to Nashville. I had that conversation May 19th. I was in Nashville July 5th. Like ended my lease. Whatever, bought a car, all the things, because I didn't have a car. So it's just like, I'm the type that just moves. So I never understood analysis paralysis until it came to my emotions.
Gotcha.
So then when my therapist, for me, it was really hard to express what I was really feeling. So then I was a well bubbling of tears, anger, hatred, all the things. So when I start, you know what I'm saying? So just learn about yourself. Spend the time to learn about yourself. Unhinge your thoughts from what people think about you And from, and it's easier said than done, but it's a process. Start now. That's my advice. Start now. You know, be you.
I love it, y'all. Y'all, this has been one for the books. Again, if you ain't watch it over and over and over again, because there's so many different nuggets and gems like left and right. So yes. All right. So we're going to close on out, y'all, for now.
Yes. Don't forget to get your merch.
Get your merch. Yes.
The website.
Yes.
Water bottles,
mugs, bags, shirts,
jackets.
Support Black business.
Please, y'all.
Support
please.
Black women.
BecomingEvaToday.com. Go.
Yes.
Go check it out.
As always, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We are trying to build our YouTube channel. So if you're watching this, make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Becoming Eva Today.
All right. We'll see y'all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Click subscribe on YouTube and subscribe to the podcast.
Check us out at BecomingEvaToday.com
or email us at BecomingEvaToday.com.
See you next time.